It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Pallavi and I'm a reporter for Vice World News. And I'm currently based out of India, but in a couple of hours, I am catching a flight and moving to Jakarta. I was born in India and I've grown up in this country. I studied over here and eventually I became a journalist. And I've been a journalist in this country for around 10 years.
In the fall of 2021, journalists across India found themselves cornered by rules impacting media organizations. The government tightened restrictions on what's called the Foreign Direct Investment Laws, which regulate the amount of international funding companies can receive, effectively making it so that foreign-owned companies can no longer produce news content in India. The shift put journalists working at foreign media outlets in a bind, right? They could either stay in the country and risk having their publishers shut down, or they could move out of the country and report on India from afar. My colleague Pallavi Pundir is one of those people. She chose the latter. She decided to leave. In February of 2022, she moved to Jakarta, Indonesia.
I am moving to Jakarta. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been packing up my whole life in one giant suitcase. And it's very interesting that I started learning Bahasa so that I'm able to understand the local language. So yeah, I'll be traveling for the next 2 to 3 days. And I'll be in Jakarta on the 9th.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Soekarno-Hatta International Airport, where the local time is 3:30 in the afternoon and the temperature is 30 degrees Celsius. Please keep your seatbelt fastened until the sign has been switched off.
India has clamped down tightly on freedom of speech.
American web services provider Yahoo shut down its news operations in India today due to the new foreign direct investment rules.
Is democracy being dismantled in Narendra Modi's India?
My phone number address were put out. Burnt copies of Gujarat files were at my doorstep with some blood on them. But the point is, this is my country. These are my people.
I'm Ariel Zimros. This is Vice News Reports. Over the last 8 years, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been slowly transforming the country. His latest attack on journalism has impacted us at Vice, but it's also forced the shutdown of entire bureaus, like the India Huffington Post and Yahoo News. But of course, many journalists have decided to stay. For this episode, I hand off to Pallavi, who spoke with the award-winning journalist Rana Ayub, based out of Mumbai. Over the last decade, she's been one of the most targeted journalists in India. She has been harassed for everything from her identity to her finances, and she still refuses to leave. Rana and Pallavi dig into how the rise of Prime Minister Modi has led to an increase in incidents against minorities, a crackdown on journalists and activists, and the decline of India's democracy. Pallavi takes it from here.
Hi, Rana.
Hi, Pallavi.
Could you introduce yourself?
Pallavi, I'm the global opinions writer at the Washington Post. I'm also an independent journalist and writer. I live in Mumbai, but report from all across India and South Asia.
So, Rana, over the past few weeks, it's been really hard for us to schedule this interview because you've been going through a lot. Could you tell me what's been happening?
I'm being investigated for my alleged foreign sources of income. There's a group called the Hindu IT Cell, which is a Hindu supremacist group. These people filed a complaint against me on the basis of money laundering. And yes, it was basically a lynch mob that came against me. A barrage of more than 200,000 tweets and same number of Instagram posts and Facebook posts were generated against me. So that's what the last 3 weeks of my life have looked like.
This is a lot to unpack, Rana. And I just wanted to ask you, like, you know, like, how does all of this make you feel? You know, like, what's going on in your head?
It was overwhelming. It drove me to a point where I almost contemplated leaving the profession. But I guess that's exactly what they want. They want me to leave the country. They want me to stop doing the journalism that I do.
So, Rana, as an investigative journalist, what kind of stories compel you? You know, like, what kind of stories do you love chasing?
The kind of stories that I like really reporting on are the ones that are about violation of human rights, that are about injustices, whether it's happening in China to the Uyghurs, whether it's happening in Myanmar.
India has already not taken responsibility for Rohingyas who are trying to cross over. They're trying to send them back. I think this incident certainly shows that India really needs to have a moral compass. Where does this leave 4 million citizens? They are now rendered homeless.
Whether it's happening to the Muslim community in India.
It's a rhetoric which basically is aimed at polarizing Indian Hindus and Muslims.
A lot of people say, is it activism? I would say it's active journalism. So that's who I am.
So Rana, when did you start to become aware of religious politics in your life?
We were the only Muslim family and we never felt insecure. I was just one amongst everybody. But on 6 December 1992...
Hindu activists from all over India came to Ayodhya that day to correct what they perceived as a historical injustice.
The demolition of the Babri Masjid was to happen.
The mosque has been a flashpoint between Hindus and Muslims in the Indian subcontinent for more than 150 years.
Babri Masjid, which was an iconic mosque, it was demolished by the Indian right wing whose leaders are now in political power.
The destruction sparked national and international protests by the Muslim community. Towns and cities were swept by rioting, and more than 2,000 people were killed.
And that's the time I was made to realize my religious identity. My life changed after that. Even in school, the kind of communal slurs I had to face. Even today, I have nightmares that I am shutting the doors and the windows of the house and getting my family members in. 92-93 also changed the nature of Indian politics.
In 1984, the BJP, the current ruling party in India, and the party which many Hindu nationalists turned to, held two seats in the lower house of the Indian parliament. Less than 4 years after the demolition, the number rose to 161.
Where the men who organized it and the men who conspired it became the leaders of India. And that made a lot of us realize who we were as our religious identity. And I think personally, if justice had been done then, this injustice that we see every day would not have happened.
It's important to remember again that key leaders of the BJP, which is the current ruling party in India, they spearheaded the campaign which led to these horrific riots and violence in 1992. And so it changed the secular nature of politics in India. But personally, Rana, how did the Babri Masjid demolition impact you?
I think what happened in 92 completely scarred me. In fact, I went to Gujarat in 2002 to get closure, to, you know, because I felt helpless when 92 happened. I was a kid and I felt like, okay, let me do something that might help.
Officials estimate that more than 1,000 people were killed during these communal riots. They were triggered by the death of almost 60 Hindu pilgrims in a train fire, allegedly started by Muslims.
And communal tension broke across the city. I have never ever in my life seen the hatred that communities had for each other that I saw in 2002.
Many blame the state's chief minister and now prime ministerial candidate Narendra Modi. They say he failed to stop the attacks an accusation dismissed by an official investigation and his supporters.
And of course, Prime Minister Narendra Modi was the Chief Minister of Gujarat back then. And so this trip set the foundation for your book, Gujarat Files. I remember I was a young journalist back then and I used to read your interviews about how you reported it. And it was absolutely bone-chilling. Could you tell me why this investigation was so important to you?
So this was an investigation where I posed as a student of the American Film Institute Conservatory. I gave myself a Hindu name, Maithili Tyagi, and I went undercover with multiple cameras on my body. And I took confessions from people who spoke about Mr. Modi's complicity in not just the Gujarat genocide of Muslims, but also the extrajudicial murders. Every editor in the country kind of eased out saying we can't publish. I used to go to my psychiatrist very often because this entire investigation put a self-doubt. And I was like, am I not a good journalist? I borrowed some money from friends and I self-published Gujarat Files and I translated all the tapes and I put it out there. And I called a press conference of all journalists.
I've been telling my family for the last 2 weeks. I mean, when I got the first copy, they said, do you feel anything? I said, I'm feeling different because it's been a fight for the last 5 years. I promised myself I won't cry.
Which is why I keep saying, had I not developed an international profile, I would not have been alive today. Because the Indian media completely threw me under the bus with my investigation and with my work.
More after the break.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Rana, when you published your book in 2016, it really made you an enemy of the state and of Prime Minister Narendra Modi himself. Can you paint a picture of what happened in the years following?
2018, my image was morphed on a porn video and I saw it on the fan page of a BJP guy and it's circulating on his WhatsApp group. And I was doxxed, my phone number, address were put out. Burnt copies of Gujarat Files were at my doorstep with some blood on them. Horrible phone calls saying, we know you stay at this particular building and we know you stay on the 7th floor and we know that you are in the NDTV studio. So it's a price that not just I have had to pay, but also my entire family has had to pay the price for my journalism.
You know, Rana, this type of harassment that you just mentioned, journalists being stalked and harassed, you know, like these are the moments where I question if the crackdown on media has gone too far. And I question what kind of democracy we're living in right now. Do you feel like India is a democracy?
I remember in 2016 when I launched my book, everybody would ask me this question about what do you think of the Indian democracy? And I would take great pride in saying, whatever you say, do not attack the Indian democracy because I have absolute faith in the institutions, the fundamentals, the constitution. But over the years, I mean, even in the last 5 years now, I now have come to a point where I say that the Indian democracy now is only on paper. To see its institutions crumbling, to see our judges just holding on to crucial judgments.
Late last year, a school in the southern Indian state of Karnataka implemented a hijab ban. It told its female students you cannot wear hijab to school. That ban spread to other schools in the southern state, and so did protests criticizing it.
Like you've seen the hijab ban, and the judge is still arguing on that and ask them to put their fundamental right on hold. I don't think something like this happens in a functional democracy.
So Rana, we've seen obvious political setbacks, you know, like the government conceding to the farmers' protests and backing off on their reforms, or receiving widespread criticism against the COVID response. And yet Modi is still largely popular. Why do you think that is?
One of the reasons why I think Modi is popular is the massive divide and communal polarization in the country. I mean, if you hear the speeches of all the top leaders, what is their rhetoric about? It's about Muslims, it's about Pakistan, it's about terrorism. It's about alluding the badge of terrorism to Muslims. So what is this if it's not polarization? When the chief minister of the largest state in India, on an open platform in a television interview, calls Muslims a racist slur, he has created this imagined victimhood amongst the majority community that their resources are being snatched away from them by people in the minority. So you will see these WhatsApp forwards and fake news that Muslims are going to dominate the population of India by 2050. They're going to rule us. They're taking our resources. So I think this man, Prime Minister Modi, is only banking on the victimhood of the majority and the communal polarization. That's where, like most majoritarian leaders, whether you see with Bolsonaro in Brazil, you see what Duterte is doing in Philippines, they're all playing from the same playbook. And Modi is no different.
So Rana, over the last few years, we've seen the crackdown on media intensify a lot. We've seen journalists being censored on social media. We've seen the shutdown of entire news publications. And we've even seen arrest and detention of journalists who cover Modi's government in a way he doesn't like. And so I was just wondering, you know, like, how do you feel about journalists who decided to leave? And have you ever considered leaving yourself?
See, the entire FDI laws that have been brought in the news media, what is the attempt? Because the Indian media has already been captured by the Indian state. That leaves us with outlets that are run by foreign publications. So how do you kind of silence them? And like you said, you bring in laws that will silence them. You bring in laws that will force journalists to move from the country. I'm sure you are doing journalism from Jakarta. But for me, I don't have that choice. I don't work for any publication that allows me to report about India from out of India. But even given the choice, probably I would not live, because here is, I live with my family. I can't leave them because they have also been targeted by the government. But the point is, this is my country. These are my people. Whether it are Muslims or Hindus or Sikhs, these are my people. I think I belong here. I really belong here. I'm not leaving India. I'm not going anywhere. Neither am I stopping my journalism. We all march on like everybody else, and I'm not the only one who's doing this. There are so many young journalists in India who are doing this.
Jailed for doing his job? Kashmiri photojournalist Kamran Yusuf has been held since September over accusations of treason and attempting to wage war against India. And reporting on Kashmir, a disputed region between India and Pakistan, is especially difficult.
So why just me? I mean, I at least have a clout and the power and the privilege of being on social media and having so many allies. Journalists like Siddiq Kappan and Fahad, who was arrested in Kashmir, none of them have my privilege.
Yeah, you're up.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Absolutely right. You know, like I follow stories of journalists in Kashmir and how they go through extraordinary challenges in order to just report. Like they have to work without internet, or they use pseudonyms, or they lie about their identity for safety. You know, like with the extremes like Kashmir in mind, how do you look at the future of journalism in India?
You know, when I look at Kashmiri journalists, I feel like they're the bravest that exist. I mean, far, far braver than any one of us can be. Young, bright journalist, 2021, with absolutely no legal aid, with no editorial protection, with no editorial freedom, and they're still doing it because they want to do this. So journalists, like all dictatorships, will always be the enemy of the state, especially in a place like Kashmir, where talking about human rights abuse is like a bad word, where mainstream media will not talk about human rights in Kashmir because it's like, hey, that's a territorial issue. And the worst thing that can happen to a journalist is when they have to self-censor, because self-censorship is literally crushing the soul of a journalist.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us, Rana, and taking the time despite everything that's going on. And we look forward to whatever's next coming your way.
Thank you so much, Pallavi, and I hope you can continue to do your journalism for Vice sitting in Jakarta, but reporting on India, because right now we need all hands on deck.
Absolutely, absolutely, all hands on deck. Thank you so much, Rana.
This story was reported by Pallavi Pundir and produced by Steph Brown. Vice News Reports is produced by Sophie Casis, Jen Kinney, and Adriana Tapia. Our senior producers are Ashley Cleek, Sam Greenspan, and Stephanie Karaoke. Our associate producers are Steph Brown, Sam Egan, and Adriana Rodriguez. Sound design and music composition by Steve Bone, Pran Bandy, and Kyle Murdoch. Our executive producer is Adiza Egan. And the VP of Vice Audio is Kate Osborne. Janet Lee is Senior Production Manager for Vice Audio. Fact-checking by Catherine Barner. Our theme music is by Steve Bone. I'm Ariel Demros. It's the end of the show, so it's time for me to ask you that if you have the time, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review the podcast in Apple Podcasts, because it really does help other people find the show. Vice News Reports drops every Thursday, so be sure to check back in next week.